Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 8, 2014. International pressure mounts on South Sudan leaders to reach a peaceful agreement.
It is us in Juba who have pushed the international community so hard for us being stubborn not to accept to reach an agreement where the people of South Sudan are yearning for that.
And South Sudan's foreign ministry tries to urge the U.S. to step back from threatened sanctions on those who interfere with South Sudan's peace and stability.
The government has not violated any human rights. Instead, it was the government that was actually protecting civilians. And for the U.S. to put sanctions on things that has no any tangible proof, we are saying as government, this is not good.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Reaction continues today over U.S. President Barack Obama's threatened sanction on anyone interfering with South Sudan's peace and stability. Some are for it, some are against it. We have several studies on reactions both here in the United States and in South Sudan. A leading member of South Sudan's ruling party, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, has called on the international community to follow America's lead by putting additional pressure on South Sudan's government to help resolve the conflict. Rebecca Nyandeng, widow of SPLM founder John Garang, tells reporter Peter Clody she welcomes the executive order which paves way for U.S. sanctions.
Somebody like me would welcome what President Obama did because it is us in Juba who have pushed the international community so hard for us being stubborn not to accept to reach an agreement where the people of South Sudan are yearning for that. Those people who are suffering under the trees, those people who are in the refugee camp, the displaced people's camp, none of us as leaders are thinking about them, and the rainy season is very near. So the international community is frustrated and they were pushed to that. So what Obama administration have done, I welcome it.
But an official of your government in South Sudan, in Juba, specifically said that the U.S. is meddling.
You know, our government doesn't know what they are talking about. They always criticize anybody who tell them that what you are doing is wrong. If you take off your clothes and you are walking on the street naked and you are told you are naked, do you want to tell people that you are not doing that? So they are the one pushing the international community hard to do that because the human rights is speaking.
So you believe that there should be more sanctions by other Western countries or other African countries because there seem to be no clear sign of progress at the peace negotiations? Is that your stance?
Especially individual sanctions is very important because they say that the international pressure has gone down, so they are okay, they can do whatever they want to do, and there are no more killing, no more war, so they can be stubborn in Addis Ababa. But if there is international pressure, I think they would listen.
You blame the government, but it takes two to tango. Don't you think the rebels need to share the blame in the ongoing conflict?
I can say that, but you know who's wearing the hat? The president is the one who's supposed to resolve the problems, whether he's the one who's supposed to take the blame or to take the achievement. If it is the achievement and negotiation has been achieved in Addis Ababa, the achievement goes to him. So the rebels are carrying guns and they are the people that he's negotiating with. And he's supposed to see how he can bring them in Addis Ababa so that they can negotiate, so that the lives of people are safe. So the responsibility entirely is in the hand of the government, not the rebels. But you know, for the government, they need people who carry guns so that they can negotiate. This is what I'm seeing today.
So you are calling for more international pressure on both sides to settle the conflict?
That's right. Because, you know, the government is very stubborn. The international community and us, we were calling for the release of political detainees last time. And it was put in the agreement that the release of 11 plus one who was under house arrest, Dr. Peter Adwok, they were supposed to be released. They want to release seven and left four and one under house arrest. Now the international community is calling for the rest to be released, but they put them into court where these people, the court is going on their favor. Secondly, the seven who have been released, they are denying them not to participate in the negotiation. And this is where the problem comes from.
That's Rebecca Nyandeng, widow of SPLM founder John Garang. She was speaking with reporter Peter Clody. South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs officials are talking to their counterparts in the United States, trying to encourage them to back away from threatened sanctions. Officials say such threats can only harm ongoing peace efforts in Addis Ababa. Philip Aleu has this story for VOA from Juba.
Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesperson Mayuen Makolari says the executive order issued by U.S. President Barack Obama last week, paving the way for possible sanctions, came as a surprise. The order allows the U.S. to freeze assets of anyone who commit human rights abuses or threaten South Sudan peace and security. It does not list anyone who might specifically be the target of sanctions, either in the government or among the opposition. And it says there was no need for the order.
The government has not violated any human rights. Instead, it was the government that was actually protecting civilians. And for the U.S. to put sanctions on things that has no any tangible proof, we are saying as government, this is not good. It will not be good for the two countries, the United States and South Sudan.
And it says Minister of Foreign Affairs, Barnaba Marielle Benjamin, has been talking to officials at the U.S. Embassy to encourage them to rescind the executive order, or at the very least, not to exercise it. The order calls on both sides to immediately engage in and follow through on the inclusive peace process led by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, and resolve this conflict. But it says if anyone from the government is sanctioned, it will likely slow the peace negotiations in Addis Ababa. The third round of the talks have been postponed until the end of the month.
We don't want the process of the peace to be complicated. We want this process of peace to be given a chance so that the rebels and the government can pursue the peace in a conducive atmosphere whereby both parties can be able really to sign the document of permanent ceasefire to allow humanitarian assistance to go around South Sudan to deliver assistance to the people.
Fighting in South Sudan has continued despite a cessation of hostilities agreement signed by both sides in late January. For VOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
South Sudan's rebels allied to former Vice President Riek Machar say the threatened sanctions will not affect them. Lul Roy says his group is serious about ending the conflict. He says the Kiir administration is to blame for putting obstacles in the way of the peace talks. Roy says they will continue to negotiate and are ready to end the fighting, which started in mid-December last year.
We have been observing every part of the agreement that takes it on our side, and to the government that should be worried. We are not worried. We have not been obstructing any peace process. We have been obeying every step that we considered part and parcel of the peace process.
The government in Juba is saying that they are not the ones fighting. And you are saying that your group is not involved in any fighting. Now, who is fighting in South Sudan?
If you have read, I released a press statement yesterday informing the world about government attacks on our positions in Mayom County and Koch County and all the villages that were burnt by the government forces. You can go to Sting Report and you will get my report on all the incidences that were carried out by the government against our positions.
The other condition in this executive order signed by U.S. President Barack Obama is that they will impose sanction on whoever is standing on the way of peace. Your group has been negotiating in Addis Ababa, and to this end, nothing has come out. Who should be blamed for the slow progress of the peace talks?
The body that is responsible is obviously the government.
Why do you shift the blame to the government when you are also involved in the negotiation? You are also involved in the negotiation. In fact, your group is refusing that the former seven detainees should not be part of any negotiations.
I don't think so. The body that came out clearly against the participation of the seven released political detainees is the government, and they presented a letter of objection to the IGA team. Our side did not present any letter of objection. And it is very clear that it is the government that is refusing. So the government keeps on changing the goalpost whenever a solution is about to be formed. It is not, we are not party to it.
What would be your ideal solution for ending this conflict?
First and foremost, the conditions we put forward from the first round were very clear. Withdrawal of Ugandan forces and all the foreign fighters that are in the country, the UPDF, Justice and Equality Movement, SPLA North, and all the fighters that are currently fighting on the side of the government. The release of the remaining four political detainees and a comprehensive
kind of a solution to all the problems that brought us to where we are.
The word comprehensive is a little bit too big for a common man to understand. What do you mean by comprehensive solution to the problems that brought you to get apart?
Our president, Dr. Riek, came out with 6 points that needed to be addressed. The issue of corruption, the issue of bad governance, the issue of insecurity, the issue of bad economic policy, the issue of tribalism. These were the things that he had talked about that needed to be addressed before the conflict erupted. We have a feeling that we cannot get to a final and comprehensive solution as long as Salva Kiir is still in Juba.
But the international community is saying that they will not support any regime change.
We are not here to satisfy the demands of the international community. If the main business of the government in Juba is to kill civilians, like over 20,000 civilians killed in Juba, if they are the business of the government, then the government is not a legitimate government. And the international community should not support a government that is killing its own people.
The U.S. president specifically said there should be an end to this conflict, and whoever stands on the way of peace will face the consequences.
We are for peace, but we don't want a bad peace. We want a good settlement so that a repetition of what we have seen, of what we are still seeing, does not happen maybe after 4 months or 5 months down the line. For us to have a comprehensive solution to all these problems, we need to look at all the problems and look for a solution once and for all.
Lol Roy is the spokesman for SPLA-SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to me earlier today via a satellite phone from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, where the talks are being held. South Sudanese activists attending a conference in New York say targeted sanctions are the right way to go because they won't harm ordinary people, but they will help to crack down on corruption at the highest level and push government and the rebels back to the negotiating table. Karen Zaivogo was at the conference and spoke with the organizer and participants.
Amir Idris is the chair of African and African American Studies at New York's Fordham University. He organized the conference long before the U.S. sanctions were announced.
The reason that we organized this conference is to, well, two reasons. First is to give people the opportunity to express their views about what is happening in South Sudan, and secondly, because of the urgency of the crisis or the matter in South Sudan.
But with the conference taking place a day after President Obama signed the executive order, it's no wonder that the sanctions were a hot topic here in New York. Sarah Clito Rial traveled to New York from Boston for the conference. The women's rights activist says she welcomes the U.S. sanctions, even if the move is long overdue.
The sanction is a good step. It came in late. I feel like our government needed this pressure long time ago, even before December event. Because there has been series of corruption going on, series of negligence to the people.
Jock Madud Jock, a professor at Loyola Marymount University in California and a co-founder of the Sud Institute in Juba, told the conference that the announcement of the sanctions got a gleeful reception in South Sudan. Locals there are tired of seeing their country's wealth benefit only a tiny percentage of the population, he says.
As every South Sudanese will say, all their money was siphoned off and put in foreign bank accounts. And this is why they are very jubilant now when they heard Obama the other day saying that he will go after these guys. A lot of people are very happy about this.
But Jock points out that there's a big obstacle facing anyone who wants to fight high-level corruption in South Sudan. First, he says, you have to find the money, and corrupt officials are very good at hiding it.
I mean, the problem is that some of them have put the account in the names of non-existent relatives, dead relatives, or children who have different last names from the fathers in Australia or UK or United States. So it will be very difficult to trace them, but corruption is a serious cause of mistrust of the state.
William Attilo, a community organizer who lives in the southern state of Texas, says he hopes the threat of having their assets seized will strike enough fear into government officials to get them to go back to the negotiating table. The slow-moving peace talks in Addis, which have so far yielded little, are on hold until the end of the month.
The sanction for ordinary people is nothing for them, but for the officials, those who are in the government,
when they see the sanction, maybe they will change their mind and then they work towards the peace. That is, I think, is the policy why the USA imposed the sanction.
For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
South Sudan officials attended the conference but chose not to give comments. It was a defense team's turn to call witness today in the hearing of four senior political detainees accused of trying to overthrow President Salva Kiir's government. But the judges adjourned the case once again, this time to attend a funeral of a colleague. Charlton Doki has more from Juba.
The five-judge panel held a brief session this morning before announcing the adjournment, the fifth one in the month-long hearing of former SPLM Secretary-General Pagan Amum Okech, former Security Minister Oyaideng Ajak, former Deputy Defense Minister Majak Dagot Atem, and the former head of mission to the U.S. Ezekiel Lol Gatkuoth. Monyiluak Alor is the lead defense attorney.
Yesterday, the first witness gave his statement, and he completed his statement. But after the witness statement, usually the court would ask some questions. Those questions were not asked yesterday because of time. So today the court used the first moments to ask its questions.
While answering questions from the judges, former Security Minister Oyaideng Ajak acknowledged that he had a phone conversation with former Unity State Governor Taban Dengai on the night of December 15th when the violence broke out in Juba. Ajak says during that conversation, a recorded version of which was played in court yesterday, Taban asked him to speak to an unnamed SPLA officer at the Bilfa military headquarters who allegedly said his life was under threat that night. Ajak testified that he did not believe there was any attempt to overthrow President Kiir's government. The government points to a press release written by the accused and distributed at a news conference on December 6th, 9 days before the violence broke out, as a key piece of evidence proving the former officials wanted to overthrow the government. During that press conference, they accused President Kiir of having dictatorial tendencies. Ajak defended the press release and said the news conference was called to raise important SPLM party issues. Alor says the hearing will resume on Friday.
They were supposed to move to the second accused, but they said because one of their colleagues died, so they have to go to the funeral. That's why they postponed the session to Friday.
Aside from the four political detainees, the prosecution says it will also charge former Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar Teny, former Unity State Governor Taban Dengai, and former Environment Minister Alfred Ladugore, all of whom remain at large. The officials are also being accused of inciting the masses, subverting a constitutional government, insurgency, causing disaffection among the police and the army, publishing false information, and undermining the authority of the president. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The beginning of the rainy season raises the risk of cholera and dysentery. These are infections of the intestine that cause cramps, severe diarrhea, dehydration, and sometimes even death. The diseases can be spread when floodwaters carry human waste. And even after the rain ends, the tiny organisms that cause the diseases can continue to live on in stagnant pools of water. That's why it's so important for you and your family not to eat contaminated food or drink bad water. Only drink bottled water or water that's been boiled or purified. Peel raw fruits and vegetables before eating them, or even better, cook them for at least 5 minutes and eat them while they're still hot. Finally, make sure you wash your hands with soap and water before eating. Taking these steps will help you and your family avoid serious disease.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the head of Citizen TV defends his decision to stop broadcasting, saying reporters cannot cover stories until the streets are safe. Stay tuned.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. Find us on shortwave 11620, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in matters of government, should the majority always rule?
You know, if it is by democracy, and when it involves voting, definitely the majority have to be ruling. That's when you apply democracy by voting, not violently. You see, always they say we go by the majority. That's the saying.
At times the majority always rule. Yeah, but it depends on the nature of the tribe that is in the power. Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely no. The majority of the people should not rule the country, because the ruling is based on the talent and experience that someone has. If the majority of the people are allowed to rule in the country and they are not wise, that country will not experience a democracy in the country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday's health segment. Today we are talking about efforts to contain the Ebola outbreak in Guinea. The World Health Organization says there has been 143 suspected cases since the outbreak was announced on March 21st. The World Health Organization says 86 people have died. Today, the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies announced it is increasing support for efforts in Guinea. Panu Sarasito, the leader of the IFRCS Field Assessment Coordination Team, tells VOA Joe DiCapua it's deploying more health specialists.
The response in an outbreak is always a bit different than other type of natural disasters, where there's first an event and then you can assess the damages and the effects of the event and you do your planning and then you start implementing. Since this is a communicable disease, the situation is evolving all the time and the dynamics of the operation is completely different. You have to adapt your ways of working, your resource allocation all the time. You have to stay vigilant and also think ahead. If this goes bad, if the disease spreads to this area or that area, so we have to assess the risk all the time. The infrastructure in Guinea is challenging. The roads are not very good. The epicenter of the epidemic at the moment is in the south, and it takes 2 days for us to get there, because there is no airlift available. Also, there are several communities in the southern area, the forest area of Guinea, where we have to work to reach the local community with information and protection and trace the contacts of already confirmed Ebola cases.
Now, the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says it is increasing its support in the region. Can you tell us how you're doing so and how that support will be used?
We released some disaster relief emergency funds. Last Friday, we launched an international appeal because we see that the needs are going to be larger, and that international appeal is going to support our operations, the capacity to bring the assistance and the goods to the south and other affected areas. We have been requested to support the clinical case management in the isolation wards in terms of disinfection. So the Red Cross, together with the partners, has a big share of the workload. And for that, we need the resources.
Would you explain how fear and stigma can make dealing with this outbreak even more difficult?
I'm thinking of the day when this is over. I mean, there will be a day when the epidemic is over, and at that time, we all have to live together again. Stigma and fear and blaming a special group or special individuals for bringing the disease does not help now, and it won't definitely help return to normalcy after the epidemic is over. during the response, it also makes it more difficult if we cannot reach the people with correct information on how the disease is actually spread and how you can protect yourself and your family and what you should do if you suspect that you have got the disease. We need to use mass media. We use SMS campaigns. There are info lines being set up. The Red Cross has a recurrent radio spot and a radio show where the head of the health department of local Red Cross answers questions and talks about Ebola. And what is also very important is to actually go to the people in the local communities and give them the opportunity of voicing their fears.
As far as health officials go, where is this epidemic at this point? Still at the beginning? Do you think you're starting to gain a little control, or you have a very long way to go?
Ebola is special in several ways. There is no man on earth who can make an epidemic model for us. Not because they don't know how to do an epidemic modeling, but because we still know not enough about how Ebola behaves.
That's Panos Aristo of the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. From Conakry, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Now we go back to Juba. The managing director of Citizen TV says he has decided to temporarily suspend the country's only independent television broadcast. He says it's not safe for his staff to cover news at night. Mungome Davis Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
CTV managing director Neal Ball says he reached the decision Saturday with his board of advisors and immediately shut down operations. He says after several frightening incidents, his staff was too scared to work at night.
Our car had been shot several times. They did not direct to shoot the people inside, but they have been shooting on the car. There are a lot of risks. You cannot move after 11 o'clock. So we try, and many times most of our staff have been sleeping on the road, sometimes inside the car, and sometimes the car cannot return.
A government-imposed 11 p.m. curfew has been in place for months. Ball says they had already tried to keep the station going by closing the station at 11 p.m. It used to run from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m., but he says staff members still needed to be at the station after 11 p.m., which meant they would be stuck. He says he did not want to risk his staff members' lives in order to keep the broadcast on the air. Police spokesperson Colonel James Mande Enoka says he and security officials understand that journalists' jobs may require them to be out after curfew. He says there should not be a problem for CTV reporters and other media staff members.
Provided you justify yourself, your case to the individual person who is talking to you. He's a human being like you. We don't have angels here on earth. Definitely there will be no problem. They are coming from work. They show their ID. Nobody will say, no, sleep here. Any reasonable personnel will not do that. And these personnel are deployed now under senior officers.
Mande says he has yet to receive any reports of police officers or other security personnel firing on media vehicles. He says if Ball reports the incidents to his office, the police will open an investigation. Ball remains skeptical.
At some point, you will find soldiers are hiding in that corner. You will not know that there is a checkpoint. The obvious checkpoint, we don't have a problem. We can negotiate. But at some residential area, they are really dangerous.
Ball says he will monitor the situation for 1 month and afterwards determine whether the security situation improves enough to the point where he feels his staff will be safe covering the news again. For VOA News, I am Gume Devs Ruakarinj in Juba.
Philip Aleu contributed to that report from Juba, and that brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. I'm John Tanza in Washington.